Do things that come before other things imply that the things that they imply will happen again? No. Welcome to MGo Podcast 5.3.
What's up, guys?
I have a question.
What?
Why?
Why what?
Just why?
Anything?
Everything.
I can't tell you.
Because I have no answers to this.
The way I work is I look at past events and assume that they correlate with future events. And apparently they do not.
I'm a history major, and that was tended to be how I attack things as well.
So,
hence the tire fire pictures and the accurate game
so
film
the performance
breakdown
of Michigan against Notre Dame actually means nothing, like the rest of the world. Nothing means anything, and past events have no effect on future events, and at any moment, all of our atoms may decide to repel each other.
Or Devin Gardner may decide to sidearm a screen pass and right into a defender's hands and,
well,
you know
what the worst part was? I have an adorable niece who is 9 years old. And she was sitting next to me.
Oh, no. I was about to say, don't tell me she was anywhere near you.
She was.
Oh, no.
And I didn't actually say anything that was terrible or profane, but that was the worst part, where she's just there having a good time, and I'm dying inside, just dying.
Can I just say welcome to the press box experience? Because it actually feels it feels kind of good to be able to get that one off my chest, because that's what we got to go through every week.
Yeah, well, it wasn't supposed to be this week.
No, it wasn't supposed to be this week at all. I showed up 20 minutes before kickoff. I think it's the latest
that
I've shown up to a game.
You've ever come.
I'm usually there an hour early. The food was all gone by the time I got there. There was just cake. I ate lemon cake for lunch.
There was just cake. At least Tom was happy, I'm assuming.
Yeah, I'm assuming. I don't know if Tom was there, actually.
No, there was actually very few people there. That kind of made the end of the game a little bit better, because, you know, our reactions became sort of exaggerated and visible and audible. So
did either of you start weeping?
Not openly.
Not openly.
I think I crawled under the table one time. I put my head on the...
Seriously?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. You can't
I can't
remember.
Confirm or deny this, because I had my hands over my eyes.
Right, yeah.
But, yeah, it was not fun up there. But it was very empty, so we were able to kind of,
You had your own, like, little fiefdom where you could moan without anyone giving you a dirty look.
We sit in a row with, Mason Blue News or something.
Yeah, Brad's there. Phil from UMGo Blue.
Yeah,
and
we,
Dooley.
Yeah, they're all cool.
It's an understandable
right,
group.
Yeah, you guys are all in like the...
They like watching our reactions, because they get a little bit of their own little schadenfreude out of
and
it.
And then there was some like person who was clearly covering his first Michigan football game ever sitting to my left, and I don't know if he's ever going to come back now.
All right. Oh, God. Do we have to talk about this?
We don't have to.
We
can talk about other things.
We're lacking in alternatives.
We kind of created an expectation for listeners of the podcast that it will be about Michigan football. So, I know. This is, hey, guess who has to UFR a whole freaking game this week?
Akron had, 90 plays? Have fun with that.
Shut up, Heiko.
It was 79.
Oh, 79, okay.
And all of them mattered. Every single one.
There was no garbage time.
I hate both of you so very much right now.
We're taking out our pain on you, unfortunately.
Are we going to talk about this?
Yeah, let's talk all about right. it. What the hell, Devin Gardner? Can we start with that?
Yeah, okay. That seems good. So he had... He was 16 to 30 for 248 yards. He ran 10 times for 103 yards and a touchdown. And he threw 16 interceptions and fumbled 45 times.
That sounds about right.
That's a lot. Wow.
What the hell?
I mean, when he wasn't our worst player, he was our best player. But
I agree with that.
I have a theory.
Is that nothing means anything? We already covered
I think what happened during this week of preparation, they talked about this, was that they were like, okay, we just got over, We just played the most you know competent defense that we'll face in a while. So this week
that we're just gave up 34 to Purdue, by the way.
We're not going to talk about that yet.
Okay, fine.
Yeah, yeah. Let's nothing
one,
means
one
anything.
One step at a time into the bit of despair.
But I'm sure he was, you know, mentally prepared not for, you know, not having any time to throw, not having guys in his face all the time, not having a running game. I'm sure, you know, they went into this week of preparation being like, okay, we're finally going to have a consistent ground game. We're going to give you a lot of time in the pocket. And then when that didn't happen, you just... You know, what happens when you're like, look, there is a 10-pound weight, and all of a sudden it's like 200 pounds. Well, you could probably lift the 200 pounds if you, like, were prepared for it, but...
I don't think that's how weightlifting works.
Yeah, probably not.
That seems like a good theory, but we have just... I mean, the guy was responsible for 4 turnovers by himself, and I think each and every one of them was pretty horrible. None more so than the fumble when he should have pitched the ball.
Yeah. I was going to say none more so than the screen pass throw. So we've got 2 candidates for worse.
See, the screen pass throw, I think, you know, maybe that's kind of hard to see because you've got guys in your face and you're just trying to get it to your running back and you don't see that guy undercutting the tailback. Like, that guy kind of came out of nowhere. And you know,
That's kind of fair.
That one seemed like the least.
He still
horrible.
Sidearmed it while getting tackled.
Yeah, but it went right to Toussaint pretty quickly. Well, it would have gone right to Toussaint.
Well.
So, like... Maybe he didn't see that guy. I can even sort of understand that.
I think we can forgive him for one of those, because one of them was a pass that should have been caught, and it got tipped, and then it ended up being interception, right?
That is true.
That's the fun.
Jake Butt got blown up.
Oh, Jake Butt. Yeah.
Okay, but on the fumble, like you were saying, first of all, Fitz Toussaint had a touchdown if he just
right.
pitched it.
Marlon Jackson was like, you got to pitch that ball.
Yep.
And which is interesting.
Yeah. And then, and then... He didn't even tuck it away when he made the wrong decision to keep. So it was a fumble. Because it's not that he was trying to pitch and it didn't happen.
Right. He was trying to fake a pitch. And then the guy's arms got into him and it was like burp.
Yep.
Yep.
And then, yeah. And that's what we discovered is why he has a very large negative number in the rushing column.
Yes.
Because they dinged him 12 yards for that and he deserved every negative one of them.
But when he wasn't turning the ball over, he was doing what you would expect he would do against Akron, 10 yards an attempt. He got sacked once for 10 yards. He averaged almost 10 yards a passing attempt. So if he just didn't make 4 turnovers, we'd be talking about a disturbing game for the defense, but pretty much okay for the offense, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Well, that's not true at all, actually, because we have to mention that Fitzgerald Toussaint, Michigan's leading rusher from the running back position, had 19 carries for 71 yards against Akron, which is not 4 yards a carry against last year's 105th-ranked rushing defense.
Mm-hmm.
And
I'm not sure it was his fault, which is the really disturbing
Some of it. I think that he was missing cutback lanes a lot, and there was that one where he just kind of fell over by himself in the backfield.
That's true.
But, man, that was bad.
There were a lot of plays that were just dead to rights, and that should never happen against Akron.
They're just trying to run off tackle, and there's a pile of, like, 3 Akron guys in the backfield. What do you do about that? I think you...
Wait 2 years?
Curl up in a ball and cry was going to be my answer.
Yeah.
Or buy a bottle of tequila.
Yeah.
Did either of you notice who might have been responsible for those blown things, or who was consistently
I don't think
responsible
Jack
for
Miller
those?
Had a very good game.
Nor Glasgow.
Okay.
And some of it was schematic. I think Space Coyote pointed out on the one particular zone stretch where Toussaint got buried in the backfield, they put both of their defensive tackles over the A-gaps. So Miller was damned if he did and damned if he didn't, because he had to leave one of those guys to block the other guy.
Hmm.
And then that other guy who he didn't block was going to shoot into the backfield no matter what. So you need to check out of the zone in that. I mean, one thing that seems to bother me is they don't do anything well. I guess that would bother you.
Yeah.
But so they came out and they started running the zone stretch, and that seemed fine against Central Michigan, but they don't run that well. They don't run power well. They don't run inside zone well.
They run the inverted veer well.
Yeah, well,
that actually worked.
It's a really hard play to defend.
Yeah.
Because instead of playing, you know, dinosaur football where your quarterback is either turning his back to the defense or is not really involved at all, you are optioning off a guy, you're using everyone you have as a blocker, and you're giving the quarterback the option to see what's in front of him and then decide where he's going to go instead of turning his back to the defense for a long time. And then sometimes he turns around and it's fine, and sometimes it turns around and, hey, there's a guy in your face. So, yeah, I think the waggle is super outdated, and
Especially if you can't run a zone stretch to save your life in this game.
Well, I mean, especially with a quarterback like Gardner, they're always going to have a guy going upfield.
Waiting on the backside, yeah.
You know, they don't really have a good way to exploit that tendency. So one of the things that, I'm sorry that I have to bring this up, but one of the things that Rodriguez always did is that he would tweak his run game to exploit the things that people were doing to stop his stuff. So if you remember, you know, Carlos Brown shooting off the backside of the offensive line for 80 yards a pop, that was a phase, and then opponents adjusted to that, and then he had something else that he would pull out to adjust to the adjustments of that. And I haven't seen that from Borges in the run game. He does that with passes pretty consistently.
Pretty well. But,
I mean, I think the numbers speak for themselves. Even if the line is bad, you know, you have to be letting them...
empirical evidence is...
You have to be letting them tee off on you to get those kind of numbers against frickin' Akron.
Yeah.
I mean, every first down, they tried to run, and there would be just a pile of guys in the backfield, and Toussaint would get -1 yards. And
I think while we're on our game plan... portion of the podcast, I was going to say bitching session, but
let's be honest.
Okay, the game plan bitching session. I think heading into the game, a lot of what led to the troubles, at least early on with the offense, I think, were that they were going to the game clearly expecting to just blow the doors off of Akron,
sure,
and that they would not have to run Gardner at all. And so Akron was getting very aggressive against the running backs. They weren't really respecting Gardner pulling the ball, mm-hmm, because they knew that Borges wouldn't ask him to do that unless they really needed him to, which as it turned out they did later on, and then it worked really, really well. But so much of Gardner's game is based off of that threat to run. And when Akron didn't have to respect that from the get-go, I think that allowed them to play a little bit better against the run.
I think Michigan's
and
hope...
It took Gardner out of his comfort zone a little bit.
I think
bit.
Michigan's hope is that his game is not as dependent on his ability to run.
And I think we're learning that it is a little bit more dependent than we would like on that.
I mean, it depends. Is he the guy from Notre Dame or is he the guy from this game?
Somewhere in between, almost certainly. But
shut up.
Sorry for giving my truthful response to that question.
Not in the mood.
I know. But, I didn't think the game plan was great, obviously. I think we're all in agreement there, and I think it hurt Gardner. I mean, obviously you can't have those turnovers, and those you can't completely pin on the game plan, but I don't think the game plan put him in a great position to succeed. I mentioned this before the podcast. I don't think there was a single run that Gardner made downfield on which Akron successfully brought him to the ground.
No, they pushed
They'd
him
take
out
him to the sideline, and he would just be standing there looking at them like, you pathetic slow people.
Who are winning.
Yeah.
Well,
so I just think, I mean, you mentioned the waggles are getting him pretty much killed half the time almost.
Well,
it seems like running him downfield, at some point you got to say, okay, if he gets hurt, he gets hurt, but we need to win football games.
Well, they did that, and they did that against Akron after it had become clear that they might actually lose to Akron. I think going into the Akron game, assuming that that wouldn't happen, is reasonable.
Relatively, yes.
What do you mean relatively? This is a team that's been 1-11 the last 3 years.
I say relatively reasonable with hindsight as a...
Right, so like I don't actually have a problem with the fact that they decided they weren't going to run Gardner in this game. I have a problem with the fact that they couldn't make that work.
Yeah, that's definitely the more concerning part.
I mean, they should be able to just grind these guys down and have a really boring Lloyd Carr-type experience against mm-hmm. them. You know, have 300 yards rushing, running the same play over and over again. But
instead, it was a different type of Lloyd Carr-like experience. Sorry.
Yeah. I mean, the second worst thing, other than my adoring niece being near me for this whole thing, was the fact that this felt so familiar.
Yeah.
I mean, 10-7 against Utah, that Ball State game that almost got out of hand at the end. Various things in the Rich
Northern
Rodriguez
Illinois,
area.
I think there was one in there. And
something
good
like
running
that.
Back.
Yeah. Garrett Wolf.
Yep.
We played them with Garrett
Wolf.
Yeah,
that was the one.
The San Diego State, that was 24-21.
Mm-hmm.
So, I knew exactly what
I guess there's
like.
Solid precedent for teams still turning out okay, even when they struggle against really terrible MAC teams. But,
well,
man, is it annoying to watch and sit through when it actually happens. And
I wouldn't say annoying.
And it doesn't portend well.
More like death-inducing or something.
Yeah, I was downplaying that a bit.
So,
Okay, on a positive note, J.U. Chesson has one career catch for a touchdown because Akron can't tackle and they outran everybody.
You know, to be fair to Akron on that play, they weren't trying to tackle.
They were trying to strip the ball.
No, they just pushed him towards the end zone. They were like, all right, well, you seem like a nice guy. Why don't you have a touchdown? And he's a nice guy. And I'm betting that most opponents will think like that as well.
Yeah, I'm hoping.
They will think, man, this is the nicest guy who's ever blocked the crap out of me. So
and then they're going to lift JU onto their shoulders and just
take him into the end zone.
Yeah, that would be the day, wouldn't it? It was pretty much was yesterday, actually. So
yeah, that's already happened.
Yeah,
but I just don't understand why he's not getting more time. Like, there's this rotation at the other outside wide receiver spot between him and Jackson and Reynolds. And is Jackson ever going to show anything?
I don't know. There was a moment late in the game where after I think Funchess got a little dinged up, in which Jordan Pascors and Jeremy Jackson were both on the field at the same time. And it was just like, oh, God, we're either throwing to Gallen or we're just going to have a really unsuccessful tipped off run.
And we threw to Gallen.
Yep.
Well,
I don't know. It might have actually worked because, you know, it was Akron and it was Gardner and Gallen. But
yeah, see, to me, like, that's a problem if you're putting in Jordan Pascors, who has a broken hand still.
Yeah.
And like a big
not a pass catching cast
on his hand, and you're putting him in the game instead of being able to, you know, put Dileo in there as a slot receiver and just operate from the shotgun, because you know you can run from it.
Yeah.
You can run from it fairly well.
Some of the personal decisions I didn't understand.
I think this just highlights how much Michigan did not expect this to happen. They're like, crap, we have to go back to the last week's game plan, which is...
Well, they had to go back to, before that, they had to go back to, like, the inverted veer. Yeah. Like, that's where they go back to.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't feel like they're ever going to get the fact that, hey, this play works really good.
Outrageously well.
We should make it the thing that we base our offense off of. But that's just not going to happen. And I'm always going to be butting heads philosophically.
A spread zealot for realsies.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
I don't, so to their credit, I don't think the inverted veer works as well with Gardner or anyone else other than Denard. I mean, yes, it worked against Akron, but I mean,
super lofty standard. Let's start with that. And second of all, Gardner's still pretty damn good at
he
it to
is.
The point where I don't know if he's demonstrably
so
worse
I've
than
heard,
Robinson
well,
so far.
I've heard in practice it just doesn't work.
It works in games.
Yeah, we're watching the games, and he's like galloping downfield for 35 yards every time.
Yeah, and sometimes it works. Sometimes it does work, but I'm just saying, like, the reason why they go away from that is because it was apparent to them in a practice setting that he wasn't as good as running it. I mean, he wasn't making the right cuts.
One of the worrisome things is that,
as a runner,
you know, 3 games into the season, it really appears that any sort of hype on either side of the ball on either line is because they were going up against players who are no good.
Yeah, they were playing each other in practice, and therefore looking good.
They are
yeah.
no good, and that's kind of dispiriting. We'll get into this a little bit more on the defense, but that's just kind of a disturbing thing.
It is. We're definitely. I'm at this point looking for next year to be when the line, and then we lose both tackles. So maybe 2 years from now, the line will be figured out, but right now,
well,
there are concerns about coaching. I think the inability.
Oh, are you going there?
I mean, the offensive line coaching, absolutely.
Really?
The complete inability to pull a guy for 2 years in a row, oh. I think, is a problem. And I think with the level of talent on this team,
you know who can pull though really
they're
well?
They're running out of excuses.
Purdue.
You're helping my point.
All right. That's all I want to say about the offense, because that's depressing.
Yeah.
And we'll take a break and we'll come back and we will talk about the defense.
And then a telegram come from Washington Station. This is how it read. Oh, that brave engineer that run old 97 is lying in old Danville dead. Cause he was going down a grade, making 90 miles an hour. The whistle broke into a scream. He was found in the wreck with his hand on the throttle, scalded it to death by the steam. One more time!
Alright, so what the hell, man?
For the second straight segment, that's pretty much how we start.
I mean, how many sacks did they have against Akron, Ace?
They had zero.
Zero sacks against who, Ace?
Akron.
Akron. And did they even get close? Maybe once at the end of the game.
And it's worth noting that Akron threw the ball 49 times.
49 times, zero sacks. I mean, if you were thinking that maybe it was just a really good Notre Dame offensive line that was causing this stuff, it's not.
No. Purdue successfully sacked Tommy Rees a couple times at least, including very early on in that game.
Do we have to keep talking about the Purdue? I mean, I know I brought it up first.
You did.
Now I'm depressed by it. The defensive line was atrocious. I mean, they couldn't get anywhere against a terrible offensive line. You know, there was that one rollout on Akron's terrifying last drive where they got down to the 11 on third and whatever. They had three of their guys on the ground, which is why that corner was so wide open.
Yeah.
And it's all they were trying to do on every play was stunt their way into the backfield, which didn't work because when you're stunting on every frickin' play, they know it's coming.
Well, they were tipping it like crazy. The defensive tackle would be like a half yard to a full yard off the line of scrimmage. And when they do that, you know he's looping around the defensive end and is just trying to get a head start on that.
And, I mean, I don't think anybody generated an organic pass rush the whole day, which is, I mean, how do you even have that happen? Like,
I wonder if it's from all the substitutions because you kind of need a certain amount of chemistry to be able to execute those stunts.
I don't think you need
twists.
Chemistry to beat a block. And no,
especially as a defensive end, if you can go around a guy, I mean, you're basically going one-on-one. Maybe you could argue that it's tough to get in a rhythm.
Yeah, correct me if I'm wrong, but on the defensive line, you kind of have the same sort of, you play the same sort of games with the guy across from you as any play caller. You know, you go inside once, inside twice, and then you kind of have a constraint, I guess, and you go outside or something like that. And when you constantly...
That is a possible explanation, but I think Occam's razor indicates that they just suck.
That's
Also, it's not like Michigan is the first team to heavily rotate along the defensive line, and there are plenty of teams that do that with great success.
So, I mean, my assumption is that they suck.
Okay.
Which is extraordinarily disappointing because, you know, you have all this offseason of Frank Clark hype, and he's going up against Taylor Lewan, and he's going to be awesome. And he hasn't done...
Lewan.
Taylor Lewan. Is that right?
That is right.
So he's got this offseason where he's getting all this hype, and he's not even scraping the bottom of it. He's just the same player he was, where he's out there and he vacates run lanes and he doesn't get to the quarterback.
I think that's actually you hit it right there with it's the mental part. He doesn't know when in practice when they do the drills and he gets all the hype. It's when it's like a one on one and he knows, you know, I'm pass rushing right now. I'm going to beat this, you know, this left tackle or something.
Yeah, but Frank Clark seems to be really good when he doesn't have to think.
Yeah, but in a game, you have to... I mean,
I don't even think that is the case. Because if that's the case, then we would have seen him do stuff in two-minute drill drives against the last two opponents.
That's true. Yeah. He seems really good when he doesn't have to face any blockers.
That, I'll give him.
Greatest free hitter in the history of football, but, Frank Clark.
I mean, at this point, he's Will Golston, except worse. Because he vacates run lanes like crazy. So,
oof.
I mean, does anyone have any...
I'm not arguing on this, you know.
He has a really good bull rush.
Does he?
I think so. Maybe.
I think we would have to have seen it by now. I mean, he's had two games against MAC opponents. He has zero sacks.
That would be the prime time for a bull rush is when you're going against like a 285-pound offensive tackle.
I mean, we're a quarter way through this year, and he's played the two easiest offensive lines he's going to play, and he's got nothing. He's got one tackle for loss he got against Notre Dame because Madison schemed it for him. But when it comes to beating blocks, he just doesn't do it. So we saw Taco Charlton in this game. I think we're going to see more Taco Charlton.
Mm-hmm.
We saw Mario Jamudia, who did beat one block, still not looking that great. One thing that confuses me is I don't understand why they keep lifting the nose tackle. Like, they're in a nickel, and it's first and 10, and they've got two three-techs out there. And those three-techs who aren't Jabril Black are getting blown up.
I've got to assume that Washington is still dinged up from whatever it was that was keeping him limited last week, and they don't trust anybody else.
I mean, Pipkins...
Which I don't get, because Pipkins seems to be playing well when he's out there.
And if you double Pipkins, he's going to hold up a lot better than Wormley or Glasgow. So... Even if he's not giving you a whole lot of pass rush, those guys aren't giving you any either.
Yeah.
So at least then you're protecting yourself against getting yourself gashed in the run game. And, you know, actually in the Notre Dame game, one of the most effective things that we saw as a rush was not Glasgow, but Pipkins is bowling a guy back into the quarterback.
Yeah.
Which is a great way to get your defensive ends.
That was their plan.
Yeah, because collapsing the pocket and forcing the quarterback to run out to bolt
Hoke
early.
Hoke said this yesterday after the game. He said that was their plan to get most of their pressure up the middle, but they didn't get it for whatever. And I'm surprised then to know that they lifted Pipkins and
nose tackles. I think probably were on 20% of the snaps.
Maybe.
Oh well, then they must have more faith in their three techs then.
Well, Jabril Black got a couple of early pressures, but that's the one guy they've shown has been reliable, and he's been good. But the rest of the three techs can't do anything right now.
I don't understand why you're putting Glasgow and Wormley out there when all they do is get blown up on run plays. And you know, if they were knifing into the backfield at some point, fine, but they haven't done that. So I don't know. I mean, I'm pretty alarmed actually what this means for Pipkins in specific, because Pipkins should have had half the snaps in both these games, and he did not play in the second half very much in either one. So I don't know if that's a strategic thing.
It just confuses me because
it looks like he's playing well.
Yeah, that's the part that confuses me, is it seems like he's earned more snaps based on his play in the actual games, which I think is what we should be going on at this point. I know practice matters a lot, but man, you know, game performance is kind of the be-all, end-all.
Right, and they're not really performing at that spot. And, you know, Byer is kind of the one exception. When he's that nickel defensive end, he didn't really do much in this game. But to get a sack, you kind of have to have two guys, because if there's one guy, you can just run away from him. So I'll have to take a look at it, but I thought he was pretty good in the first two games, and maybe he'll put something together as I do the film review of every single frickin' play of the 79 they ran.
Yeah. Pour one out for Brian this week, everybody.
So, in other bitches, why is Countess the nickelback when Akron is throwing it deep against the two guys they have out there with success?
My only theory here is that he is better in run support than the other corners, and therefore they don't trust DeMonte Thomas yet, and Courtney Avery's probably not healthy. And so they move him down, and they want to keep their nickel package consistent. And they assumed against Akron that would not be a problem.
Well, they've changed the nickel guy for three straight games.
They have, and that's worrisome, especially since Jordan Lewis did not play particularly well in this game.
No.
And
well, he's a true freshman.
He's being exposed to the most damaging
plays that you can be exposed to.
Yes, and playing exactly the way he played in high school, which was relying on his recovery speed to make up for the fact that he doesn't necessarily hang with people that tight in man coverage. And
he was pretty okay, well. All right,
he committed.
Yes, so he committed a couple big mistakes, but on the play that he got burned for the long fade, he looked actually like he had perfect coverage on the guy. He just mistimed his.
He was playing 10 yards off the line and got beat over the top.
He didn't get beat. He was step for step with the guy. The guy just made an awesome play. You can't.
I think when you're playing 10 yards off a guy and a throw goes over the top of you and is completed to a wide receiver, that's probably a problem.
Akron's quarterback did put those fades.
It was a very nice throw.
In the right spot consistently. Yeah. So that's something.
He got beat less badly than Ray Taylor did on the same route.
Yeah. And Taylor got a pretty bad pass interference call.
Yeah. And Lewis probably should have had one himself on another throw down near the goal line that he used his recovery speed to break up.
So, again, why is Blake Countess?
So the practice buzz.
Not at field counter.
We're done with the practice buzz.
No, just no.
Actual game stuff. I don't know why
either.
Do you think if Avery
is healthy, if they're going to bump him down to the nickel like they've done previously and just kind of live with it?
I would hope so at this point. Either that or they're waiting for DeMonte Thomas to learn the defense. But this would be high time for him to learn it by now. I don't understand what happened to him.
I mean, he was here in spring. He was going to start at the nickelback. Everybody was so hype on him, and then he evaporates.
The first play of his career was one of the most explosive football plays I've ever seen.
And then he's gone.
Yeah, I don't get it.
He's not good in coverage.
Yeah, well, neither is whoever they're putting out there instead of
him. This is the problem. The problem is that
they're putting him out there on the edge where they can get burned for big things without the safety coming over to help.
Right, but we're talking about he can't cover walk-ons.
The larger point is that it makes no sense to be playing Countess at nickel.
And there's
guys getting beat over the top on the outside, and the safeties have been playing pretty well, I think.
I haven't had a complaint about Wilson yet. I mean,
which is miraculous considering that was the main point of concern heading into the season.
I mean, I think one of the things that maybe we don't perceive is that the safeties need to get certain places more quickly. But in terms of blowing stuff downfield, when I look at the coverage, is it's usually something a safety can't deal with. So those things that were happening over in the middle against Notre Dame was, you know, a linebacker vacating his zone because he got mixed up in the call. And nothing has gotten over the top, which is what you want from your safety. So I don't know. I would get Avery out there somewhere once he's healthy, but not safety, because they seem to have that.
Yeah, they've got that covered. I think the nickel is obviously a more worrisome spot.
Well, I mean,
if they're moving their best outside corner down.
I mean, it was pretty alarming to see them play the same way that they played against Notre Dame, against Akron, where they've got their safeties 15 to 20 yards off. They've got their cornerbacks giving up slants that are so easy.
Yeah, especially since also not only were they playing the outside corners off and giving up those slants, but when they went into zone coverage, the linebackers, I thought, were doing a really poor job of getting into their drops and getting deep enough so that they couldn't complete stuff in that intermediate zone between the linebackers and the safeties. So there, I don't know. The safeties seemed to be put in a situation where they couldn't really win, and the cornerbacks were just giving up a lot on the edge.
Yeah, I don't know, man. It made sense to go bend but don't break against Notre Dame because of their red zone issues and the way their offense works and the fact that they seem like a pretty good team offensively, apparently.
And very reliant on huge plays, and we saw that
right
with the Purdue game last night. Sorry to bring it up again, but and their game against Temple, their offense goes on these massive pass plays to DeVaris Daniels for the most part. And so Michigan's strategy made perfect sense.
Perfect sense, and it worked.
Yeah.
But to see that replicated against
Akron
was alarming, because now it doesn't make sense. It just says that you feel you have no athleticism anywhere.
And that you need to play bend but don't break all the time, which is horrifying.
Uh-huh. All right. So, oh, God. Let's talk about special teams.
I fell into a winter slide and ended up the kind of kid who goes down shoots too narrow, just eking out my measly pie. But I learned fast how to keep my head up, cause I know there is this side of me that wants to grab the yoke from the pilot and just fly the whole mess into the sea.
Special teams. Also a debacle. Gibbons misses from 45, but that's his first one in 17 attempts, so I think we'll let him go on that. Archaic punt coverage remains archaic.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, I don't know what it's gonna require. And you know what pisses me off more than anything else? Is that they installed it, and they show it, and then they motion back into their idiotic punt thing.
Mm-hmm.
What is the point of that?
I do not understand the purpose of that.
That's just like setting practice time on fire.
It is.
It's like specifically designed to piss people off. Specifically me. Who are just sick of not seeing a modern punt formation.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the good thing is that Matt Weil has made so many of these punts unreturnable that it didn't really matter. But,
yes. He
should make them slightly more returnable.
He had a 54-yarder and shanked his other two, so his average was what? Exactly.
He actually kind of shanked three because he had four punts and he averaged 33 yards apiece. He had two of them that were less than 25 yards.
So Kenny Allen, maybe?
I would like to see that.
He took some warm-up snaps on the sideline during the game. I don't know why they never put him in after it became very apparent that Matt Weil wasn't getting the job.
Don't understand. I mean, Matt Weil was great when he replaced Hager up for the first four games when he was a freshman. He was the pooch punter last year. He was effective. I mean, this is like the Gardner thing where it's just like, is anything that came before meaningful ever again?
I think he got spooked on a couple of the protections, and then after that he just started...
Well, Akron almost blocked a frickin' punt in the second half. They had a guy run up clean, and I'm actually still astounded that he didn't block it because he was right there.
I wasn't even watching that because I was watching the coverage downfield because that's what I do now because I'm just terrified.
Akron came this close to blocking a punt.
I heard the stadium react, so I know the general gist of what happened. But
yeah, it was horrifying. This is what it was. I don't know. If you're going to use the archaic punt formation, at least get your blocks.
Because that would seem
to be the one reason to, you know, stay in that formation.
Well, they are moving ever so gingerly towards using an actual spread punt formation.
When they don't motion out of it, you're saying?
Yes.
Eventually?
So they have it installed, and eventually they might use it. So it'll just take probably one or two more disasters.
Oh, good.
What? That's my positive note for the week.
And it's really not very positive.
No,
at all.
It's not. Meanwhile, Akron's rugby style kicker had a 42.6 net.
Yep.
And the only return Michigan got was off a Drugilio punt return that was 9 yards.
Yeah.
And he had to break about 2 tackles to get those 9 yards. So.
Spread punt, please.
I just don't know how much more information these guys need. I mean, they're watching it every week.
Yeah, not even on other teams' fields, on this specific field that they are also on.
They see it every week, and eventually they're just going to be like, all right, we have to do this. And maybe I will put up a post that's just, I told you so, but I probably won't because that would not be nice. Yeah, okay.
Since when has that stopped you?
Sure.
Ryan Cook finds his heart.
I had an adorable 9-year-old sitting next to me. That really changes your worldview.
I have some adorable second cousins, but I've never watched any football with them.
Well, that she's pure as the driven snow, and that took a lot of effort. But let us linger in the misery of others and talk about the Big Ten with Jamie Mack.
Medicating in the sun, pinch doses of laudanum, longing for the old fecundity of my homeland, curses to this mirage, a bottle of ancient Shiraz, a smattering of distant applause is ringing in my poor ears on the old left bank, my baby in a charabanc, riding up the wind.
We welcome in Jamie Mack of JustCoverBlog.com. How you doing, Jamie?
I'm doing well. That was a pretty petrifying experience yesterday at Michigan Stadium, but we somehow survived.
Yes, somehow, I think, is the operative word there. We're just gonna leap into it. Northwestern 38, Western Michigan 17. Northwestern actually struggles in the first quarter of this game, is down 3-0 after the first one, but puts up 24 in the second. And kind of cruises away from a really bad Western Michigan team. I don't think there's a whole lot to be learned there, except maybe, you know, people have let down games. Maybe.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the game started out, it looked like the Northwestern team of 2009 and 2010. You know, those teams sort of just got into bowl games. They could move the football into the other team's territory, but they just couldn't finish anything. And their first five drives last night against Western all moved into Bronco territory, and they didn't score on any of them.
Well, I mean, that's going to be...
Eventually, they found their stride, and they, you know, and they cruised. And, you know, like you said, you know, everybody's due a letdown. I mean, compared to the letdown Michigan had, the letdown that Northwestern had wasn't really half bad, right?
No, not half bad at all.
No.
In similar news, Minnesota 29, Western Illinois 12. Minnesota's actually down 6-0 after the first quarter. Don't really pull away until 14 points in the fourth.
Yeah.
I mean, this was a really narrow game for most of it.
Yeah, I didn't catch too much of it. The one thing I can say about Minnesota is they have a noon game next week against San Jose State. They're capable, much like Central Florida's capable, and that's going to be a pretty big swing game for the Gophers if they're going to want to go bowling. If they win, they're 4-0, and they only need to find a way to win two Big Ten games with teams like Indiana and Iowa on their schedule. But if they lose, which I think there's actually a strong possibility they could, they're toast. I don't see them getting the three Big Ten wins then to get the 6 wins. So actually, when you're Minnesota football, this is a big game.
Absolutely. And karmic comeuppance for all the fun we made of them the last couple of weeks. Michigan State 55, Youngstown State 17. This one was never in doubt. 21-3 after one. You know, Michigan State had 35 at halftime. Connor Cook had how many yards per attempt, Ace?
9.2.
What?
With four touchdowns to no picks.
What?
Don't call him Brad Banks.
What? Who'd he throw to?
Let's see. Oh, everybody.
Everybody.
Nobody had more than four catches. McGarrett Kings Jr. led them with 61 yards.
That's a typical MSU box score right there. Nobody with more than four catches.
It is. Could they run the ball?
Yeah, 277 yards on 49 carries, 5.7 yards a pop.
Well, Youngstown State must be much worse than Akron.
Mm-hmm.
Much, absolutely. Much worse.
if we staged a battle of Northeast Ohio, I'm sure Akron would swamp the Penguins by four touchdowns.
Swamp them.
I just wanted to say two notes about Michigan State. One, no Damian Terry sightings at all in the game, which there was a lot of expectation that he might play. Maxwell didn't play either. And sadly, one of my growing favorite stats is, I think, out the window. Last week, there were 29 Division I wide receivers that had more receiving yards than all of Michigan State's team combined. Sadly, after yesterday, we're only down to two.
Who are those two?
Who are those two?
Yeah.
Brandon Cooks out of Oregon State, who's number two, and Mike Evans.
Mike Evans,
yeah, he's number one. He had a big game yesterday against the Tide.
To say the least. Iowa 27, Iowa State 21. This was a typical Iowa-Iowa State game where Iowa dominates statistically and can't put away the Cyclones, and the Cyclones come back at the end. They couldn't quite pull it off this time, much to the chagrin of, nobody.
Iowa ran the ball 60 times yesterday for 218 yards.
God,
3.6 yards.
That's horrible.
That's disgusting.
Plus, it just exposes your tailbacks to that whole God thing, you know?
It does. I can't believe they made it through.
Right. Well, it was mostly Marcus Weissman. You know, he always seems to come up big when they get these wins over MAC schools or ISU. So, and actually, they broke a two-game losing streak to ISU. So, you know.
Coming up big for an Iowa running back is breaking 4 yards per carry.
He's still a fullback.
Yeah.
He is very much. And this is how he avoided being struck down.
Yeah. And then Nebraska, they are up 21-3 against UCLA and allow UCLA to run off 38 straight points on them to lose 41-21. I don't even know what you do with that if you're a Nebraska fan. They got torched for, I think it was over 500 yards of offense.
504, UCLA completed 16 to 25 passes for 11.8 yards per attempt.
Shush.
Wow. They had... I mean, obviously they scored, 38 straight points, but then they scored 28 to nothing in the third quarter. Their final three touchdown drives in the third quarter went for a combined 12 plays for 154 yards. I mean, it was once the Bruins got rolling, it was quick work.
Yeah, they didn't score in the second half at all. And, mm-mm. I mean, they got to be just reeling after almost losing to Wyoming. You know, they had kind of a gimme outing against Southern Miss.
Southern Mississippi.
In the second week, and now they just, I mean, they haven't been able to stop anyone with a pulse.
No, they haven't. They're giving up 463.3 yards a game. That's 105th nationally. 28 spots worse than my alma mater, the Indiana Hoosiers, where I'm expecting I'm expecting we've got 20 minutes booked to talk about their big win later, right?
We will briefly touch on it.
Okay, cool. But those numbers are actually on the uptick, but maybe on the downtick, I guess, if you're a Husker fan. 523.4 yards dating back to last year in the last five games.
Wow. So they've... Pelini's supposed to be a defensive guy.
Defensive coordinator of some very good LSU teams that had very good defenses, and now nobody knows why.
Yeah.
Well, I've said some mean things about their defense on the podcast, and I wrote this week that I had a great time watching their spring game, but it actually reminded me of the 2009 and 2010 Michigan spring games. We kind of know what that foretold about those stop units. Over at the Corn Nation, which is their SB Nation blog, one of their writers, Paul Dalen, has actually already started his own 2007 watch for Nebraska. That is what is considered to be their worst defense in program history. That was Callahan's last year, and obviously he was pretty much tossed out of town after that. And I got these numbers from his post today. They gave up, in that 2007 year, they gave up two games of 600 yards or more and four games of 500 yards or more. In Nebraska's last 17 games alone, they've given up three of over 600 and two of over 500.
Wow.
And that starts at the beginning of last season. That does not include the 2011 game in Ann Arbor where Michigan called their shots on them all day, and it does not include the bowl game that year against South Carolina, who shredded them, if I recall correctly. So
Bo Pelini is not good at defensive coordinating. Or something.
Right,
I don't know.
Not.
I mean, he lost his brother, who was their defensive coordinator, but he's now down at one of the worst programs. It's either Florida Atlantic or National. Who cares? And he's calling for his quarterback to spike the ball on fourth down. So not exactly a brain trust up there.
He's at Florida Atlantic because Illinois' old coach Ron Turner is at Florida Illinois.
Right.
If you're looking for comedy, look there.
You just called him Florida Illinois, and I'm not going to correct you because that is correct.
kind of awful. I watched the Nebraska-UCLA game this morning as fast as I could, and to me, it seems like their secondary is just not good at tackling. I mean, I think I saw a huge missed tackle by each one of their starters during the stretch where the Bruins just got rolling. And the thing is, these guys are like fourth-year players. One of them is a fifth-year senior. They don't seem to have any young, up-and-coming underclassmen to step in. And I looked at Rivals, and they've only had 3 4-star defensive backs in the last 3 seasons, and 2 of them are community college guys. One's Damian Stafford, who's already used up his eligibility, and another one who's got his last year of eligibility this year, and he's never seen the field for him. So, there's something wrong back there, and they're not bringing in any new recruits to make it look better.
Well, this can all make us feel better about what happened in Michigan Stadium on Saturday, where Michigan defeated Akron 62-0, probably.
Yeah, right.
Sounds about right.
Yeah. We've already beaten this game into the ground, and we would like to forget its existence, Jamie, so we're just going to skip over it.
That's cool.
Instead, we will talk about Indiana's victory over Bowling Green. Mighty, mighty Indiana, 42, yes. Bowling Green, pathetically, 10. Go to town.
I was going to say the Hoosiers were only favored by 2.5. So this, I think this might have been the most impressive win of the weekend for the Big Ten.
Big Ten.
Big Ten.
We were overdue for one of those.
Oh God.
Right. Well, again, it's definitely the same old story on offense. They Sudfeld, who was pretty much taken over the quarterback there. You know, they kind of had a 3-person duel. And they didn't like how Trey Roberson started the game last week. They benched him, and he really hasn't played since. They've gone with Sudfeld, and he's on pace for 3,600 passing yards this year. He played great yesterday. And the thing with IU is they're just a fast-paced team. You know, Michigan's going to have a lot of trouble with them on the 19th. You know, there's only 8 teams in the nation that go 20 seconds or fewer between plays. And there's the usual suspects on there. Oregon, you know, Oklahoma State, Baylor, Rich Rod's Arizona team. Indiana is one of them. And they had it rolling against BG. Obviously, you know, caveats for playing a MAC team. But Bowling Green, outside of Northern Illinois, might be the second-best team in that league. And they have a fairly decent defense as far as MAC teams go. So it was kind of good that Indiana just found their groove and smoked them once they struggled early because they gave up a block punt. Actually, yesterday Indiana did give up a defensive touchdown. I should have said that first off. That never happens in Indiana games. I don't care who they played.
Well, you know, they really needed to prove something on defense after getting smoked the first couple weeks. So yeah. I don't know if Bowling Green proves it, but it's for Indiana, it's progress.
Yeah, and next week, next week they host Missouri. They're 6-point home underdogs, and I think we'll see the same thing out of IU's offense, but you know, I think we're back to the last 2 weeks. I mean, they're going to have a real hard time with James Franklin and the Josie kid who's back at tailback after being out last year after a terrible injury in the previous year's spring game. You know, those guys are just going to be a load. But I actually think it could turn out to be a pretty exciting game. It's 8 o'clock kickoff opposite the Michigan UConn game.
8 o'clock, man. It's just full of awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, so we should move on. Penn State actually loses to Central Florida. I watched most of this game. Blake Bortles, who tore up Akron, might be legit because he tore up Penn State pretty good with some impressive throws. You know, Penn State, Allen Robinson is really, really good, but Hackenberg was a little bit overwhelmed by, you know, an actual defense. And UCF really deserved to win the game. I mean, they were up 11, and they scored to go up 18, and they had a very questionable penalty pull that back. So they were up 14, and if they punch that touchdown in, you know, the end of the game is pretty much academic.
Yeah. No, I mean, you know, Bortles controlled it the whole way, and, you know, Penn State had to make some adjustments in the secondary in midstream. They put a kid on the bench and moved Adrian Amos over from safety to corner, and then that didn't work, so they went back to their kind of original lineup, and Bortles was just still drilling them down the field. I was impressed with that guy. He was very impressive. The thing with Penn State, you mentioned Hackenberg real quickly and how he was overwhelmed. You know, he's got some decent looking stats, but I don't know if they trust him yet at all to try to convert first downs through the air, especially on passing downs. They're 4 for 34 this year on third down.
Wow.
And while Hackenberg is 10 for 16 on third down passes, He only had 67 yards in those completions.
Check down city, baby.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah, exactly. Greg Davis is calling plays from Iowa City, just relaying them in for Penn State third down downs.
Yep. All right. Ohio State does not have Braxton Miller. They have Kenny Guyton, but that doesn't matter because they have 52 points against Cal. Disturbingly, they give up 34. This is just a big play fest both ways. You know, Ohio State's defense lost six of their front seven, and they returned most of their secondary. And you expect that maybe that will be more of a bend don't break outfit just because they're not going to give up long plays, but apparently they do.
Yeah.
Bradley Roby was back for this game, wasn't he?
He was.
Oh, that's disturbing for them.
Well, it was a lot like their game against Cal last year, except that they got out to a bigger lead at the start of the game, so they were able to kind of stay a step or two ahead of them. They have big plays on offense, but they also have a lot of negative plays, you know, on offense. I mean, they snapped the ball over Guyton's head one time. That thwarted a drive, and, another drive, they were in the red zone looking like they were going to go up 28-7, you know, and California just blew right in and hit them for a TFL. And that sort of kind of turned the game around for a little bit because during the middle portion of that game after that, I thought Cal had an opening to get back in. But then the third quarter started out the way the first quarter did with big plays and a big run by Ohio State. And that pretty much made the rest of the game moot.
Can we get Kenny Guyton's stats, Ace?
Kenny G was 21 for 32 for 276 yards and 4 touchdowns. That's an 8.6 YPA. And then he also carried the ball 14 times for 92 yards.
That's the backup quarterback.
Good Lord.
Quarterback controversy. That's how we're going to spin it. Quarterback controversy in Columbus.
Yeah.
I guess the only good thing there from a Michigan standpoint is I believe he's a fifth-year senior, right?
He is.
So they're not going to have this versatility for much longer, maybe?
Okay. That doesn't really make me feel a whole lot better.
Well, I guess like he's not the heir replacement when Braxton's gone is what I'm getting at. Oh.
This is actually comforting.
That is actually
comforting. We'll not have to face him next year.
They've actually had some struggles recruiting quarterbacks, which is crazy.
Yes.
Yeah.
They've got J.C. Barrett, and that's about it. But who knows? Notre Dame-Purdue, we're not playing Purdue this year, but since we just played Notre Dame and we're like super hype about beating them by 11 points, we should point out that they scraped by Purdue 31-24 with a fourth quarter comeback, which is disturbing for multiple reasons. I mean, Purdue could move the ball against these guys at all is disturbing.
Yeah, it wasn't quite as, let's just say it wasn't easy sledding for Purdue. They averaged 1.8 yards per rush.
That does make me feel better.
We can start with that. Yeah. And they only averaged 6.2 yards per pass attempt, too, on 41 throws.
This is a team that needed a kickoff return touchdown to beat Indiana State.
This is Purdue. And actually, they got a lot of their – as it turns out, that was a big setup because Purdue got two very big returns from their
faking the reverse.
So I guess pulling out trick plays against Indiana State not only wins you games against Indiana State, but nearly wins you games against Notre Dame as well. But Notre Dame eventually figured it out. Disturbingly, Purdue stopped them on the ground very easily, which Michigan could not do.
Well,
no, Michigan was inviting that.
Michigan was not.
Purdue was not inviting that, and Notre Dame had 91 yards on 37 carries.
Jeez.
Now, Tommy Rees was able to average 9.4 yards per attempt. He did a whole lot better against Purdue's secondary than he did against Michigan in terms of getting big plays. They had an 82-yard touchdown pass down the sideline to Javaris Daniels, which pretty much validated Michigan's game plan from last week, which is whatever you do, don't let DeForest Daniels get behind your defense.
Right.
He ended up with 8 catches for 167 yards and 2 touchdowns.
So validated game plan for Michigan. Still a little bit disturbing that the big scalp Michigan had is 7 points better than Purdue.
Yes, absolutely.
I don't think we need you on this one, Jamie.
That's fine. You guys said it all. I was just saying that it's such a roller coaster season. Obviously, college football is every year. 2 weeks from now, they could beat the Sooners at home, and we could be talking about, hey, this looks great for Michigan now. So I mean,
I don't get too caught up
in denigrating last week's win based on how they did against Purdue. Yeah.
All right. Good.
I denigrate what Michigan did against Notre Dame by how poorly they looked against Akron.
Exactly.
I strangely felt better about the Michigan-Akron game by seeing how flat Notre Dame came out against Purdue, because I'm just hoping that it was just there was something in the air that happened after that game, and it was just setting up for a letdown for both teams.
That's the ticket. Washington beats Illinois 34-24. You know, fairly encouraging result for Illinois, since Washington, their first game of the season, they blew out Boise State, and Boise State rebounded pretty well against Air Force. So, you know, this is still an Illinois team, but we could be talking about a bowl at the end of the year for them.
Yeah, and I agree, it was an encouraging result for them. Like you said, they blew out Boise. Illinois was getting run out just like Boise was in the third quarter, but then they counterpunched and got within one score a couple different times. And I think that there were some things going on in that comeback attempt that sort of validated what we were talking about with Cubitt last week. You know, they broke out, you know, a double reverse pass play to get him down into a red zone opportunity on one play. And then they bring this kid in off the bench, Aaron Bailey, who now has got six touches on the year, and they've all been first downs or touchdowns. And they bring him in on fourth down, fourth and two from the six-yard line, and he runs it in for a score. And I look at those two plays, and I'm like, I don't think last year's team or any of Zook's teams those last 2 years could have pulled those two plays off. I mean, I really don't. So, I mean, I agree. It was a very encouraging result for Illinois, especially in the way that they, you know, they fought back and made a game of it after being down 31-10.
I will note something a little less encouraging, which is that Washington passed for 342 yards, and Illinois had 327 total yards. They gave up 615 to Washington, so I think...
All right, well, we're still talking about Illinois.
We are talking about Illinois hanging with a ranked team, and that is an enormous victory for Illinois in terms of progress compared to previous years. But
well,
are they a within 10 points of Washington team in real...
In action? Real life? No.
Probably not.
Okay. All right, we should move on to...
They are the one Big Ten team worse than Nebraska right now in total defense, so...
That is not
Congratulations.
Good. Congratulations.
Congratulations. Yeah.
All right, the crazy game of the week, Arizona State 32, Wisconsin 20. This ends when Wisconsin is centering the ball for a game-winning field goal, and an Arizona defensive lineman prevents them from spotting it so they can get it spiked. There's no penalty. They run out of time, and then the game's over. And, wow.
And drinking ensued, I'm
yes.
sure.
Yes, drinking and throwing of things and probably every window in the Madison State House is shattered this morning.
It was weird because at first I didn't even know if the Wisconsin quarterback ever was down. He sort of like pretended to kneel and then he touched the ball to the ground. So there was debate as to whether or not that ball was live. And this lineman for Arizona State just sort of kept his belly on the ball and the ref that came in didn't seem to be at all. He didn't have any urgency at all to unpile. And it was just tick, 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 and that was on first down too. Not that they were gonna run any more plays, but I mean, that's just gotta be awful. It was a chip shot field goal for the win.
That's amazing. I mean, I don't know how you allow that to happen as a ref.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the clock is supposed to run, but I mean, we've all seen enough football. We've seen clocks stop in that situation, you know, and then immediately start back up. You know, when there's a big pile situation like that, and the guy was clearly laying on the ball. I mean, that actually is a penalty.
Absolutely. And, you know, I bet Wisconsin is going to feature heavily this week in Schadenfreude, and not unjustly. So.
Yeah, exactly. Now, you know, otherwise, Melvin Gordon had another big game. He started the second half with an 80-yard touchdown run that put Wisconsin up 21-13, which is kind of the lead they held for much of the second half until about midway through the fourth quarter. Arizona State, though, seemed to be able to pass the ball at will on Wisconsin's secondary. I mean, Kelly was just slicing and dicing them the whole second half. It was a very entertaining game, and then a crazy ending. And Pac-12 officials kind of have this reputation. They seem to give us one or two really crazy things a year. Something is kind of fishy out there.
Absolutely. Too much weed.
Yeah, probably.
All right. Well... I guess we don't feel nearly as good about Michigan's chances to run the table or win the division as we did last week because...
Or really any individual football game.
Of obvious reasons. But at least the Big Ten helped us out a little bit with Nebraska doing what Nebraska did and Northwestern actually struggling a little bit against Western Michigan.
You know, over the summer, Hako wrote the UConn preview, and he predicted like 14-6 Michigan, and the whole blog hated him because that was going to be too close. And all of a sudden, I think the whole blog shifted to his side.
Yeah, well, that happens.
Michigan is going to be favored by 17 or 18 points in this game based on what the early line that Bookmaker threw up today. They were minus 12 on the summer line, so they're still a more expensive favorite than the summer line, but I don't know what to expect. Yesterday shell shocked me.
Absolutely, and you know, our best hope is that nothing that ever happens before has any meaning going forward.
Yeah.
So nihilism and despair are our friends.
Well,
after
yeah,
this
it's
game.
You know, yeah. The Akron game didn't really get frustrating for me until the and I know you guys beat this all the time, until the pick six, though. You know, because, you know, let's face it, 2 years ago after the 2011 Notre Dame game, Michigan was up 3-0 against Eastern. And even in 2010 and 2009, I think they were home after both those Notre Dame wins. And it, you know, it just was kind of like the same thing. You know, Eastern Michigan 1 year, I think it was 10-7, you know, at halftime, and it ended up 42. So you know, as I was watching play out, I was just sort of eventually expecting them to pull away, and then it was 21-10, and it was all going that way, and then that pick six just turned the whole game around, and from that moment on, I just felt like throwing up.
So the problem with that theory is that those teams turned out to be the kind of teams that lead Eastern Michigan 10-3 deep into the game. So, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, 2011. You know, I know they weren't. I know that that wasn't an off team, but they still won a lot of games.
That's true. But
against the still shoddy Big Ten.
Yes. Well,
we could mention Ohio State last year, but they never played a team as bad as Akron, I don't think.
No. I mean,
or at least played anyone close.
I mean, if we were playing like a decent MAC team or a high level MAC team, that I mean, they would have lost.
Or a crappy Cal team.
Yeah, they would have been. They would have been done.
I think that would have been Terry Babb's first FBS win at Akron, by the way.
Okay, Damian, we're going to end on that, just because we don't want to talk about this anymore. So we will talk to you next week.
All right, have a good week, guys.
Yeah, you too.
Thank you for listening to the MGO podcast. I am A. Sandbender, along with Brian Cook, and I have completely lost the will to come up with something clever for the closing.